And hello, everybody, and welcome to this week's episode of the Ecom Sales Tax Podcast. I'm your host, Andy Johnson. I've got with me my special guest, Dan Peisner, visiting from the Dallas office here in St. George. Welcome, Dan.
Thank you, Andy.
Dan, you a little bit nervous?
Oh, no.
We're on camera.
We're always on camera.
And we have the studio audience. First time we've had a studio audience. You might see that out there in the viewing audience that we have some of our team here in St. George also here to heckle Dan, because today we're going to be talking about the five most common questions we get from e-com sellers. And so I want to also introduce, as part of our team here, is Russ Gordon. Hello, Russ.
Hey, hey. Thanks for having me on.
Hey, you're welcome. And Russ is just a few offices over here in St. George office. And Russ talks to, I don't know, what would you say, Russ, five e-com sellers a day that have questions?
So at least five or six new Amazon or e-com sellers every day I'm talking to, just to help educate them.
Right. That's what we're trying to do, just help them understand what their obligations are. We get all sorts of questions. But Russ, I've asked you to put together the top five questions that you've gotten, that you regularly get, and then we're going to see what Dan has to say about those questions. I might heckle Dan some, the studio audience might heckle, and then Russ, I'd like to get some of your input too, like what are you saying to people, so that we can just help. The idea is, how can we help e-com sellers, especially today's episode probably focus a lot on FBA sellers, how can we help them just deal with the sales taxes without losing their mind and without losing their business? All right, so Russ, I'll turn it over to you, and I'll try to help Dan with some of these questions.
All right, thanks, Andy. So, I try to put together the top five questions. We're hoping to stump Dan.
Why are you rubbing your hands together?
Because I'm excited. I'm excited because this is going to answer so much of what a lot of the e-commerce sellers ask me on a regular basis, and I can point them to the expert, you and Dan. So appreciate it. Number one question I typically get is, I just heard about Wayfair, the Supreme Court case, and physical presence is gone, and I think I need to get registered everywhere, but I don't know what I'm doing. How does Wayfair affect me?
That's an excellent question there, Russ. And I like to say that Wayfair change, in a lot of respects, changes everything, and in some respects, changes nothing. First and foremost in there, physical presence isn't gone. Physical presence is alive and well, and physical presence will still get you Nexus just the same ways that it did prior to June 21st, and you still have to register much in the same way. Some of these programs that are the states are coming out with for, specifically for remote sellers, actually are foreclosed to people that have a physical presence and can affect the way that you do registrations and collect the tax.
So Dan, if I could just back up a little bit, because we've done many podcasts on Wayfair and people can listen to those and find out what Wayfair even is. But sometimes people just, they've heard the name Wayfair and they've heard so many vendors talking about it that, hey, Wayfair changes everything. And now they have to register everywhere. So I have said that we're in the SALT moment. Have you heard me say that?
I think I have.
What do you think about that?
I think you're right. I think we are in the SALT moment. I think it's not often that that something comes along that really does change things up. It's not often that really with state and local taxes you see a seismic shift like this. And for a lot of our sellers, they are going to have to be looking at, do they need to get registered in other states? Do they need to expand their Nexus profile? Do they need to be worried about collecting the state and local tax? But at the same time, we just want to make sure that in the chasing of all this new, of the 200 transactions, 100,000 gross sales, that our clients don't lose focus on the physical presence as well, because that'll get you just as easily as the economic nexus will.
Okay, Russ, did you want to add things to that, like things that you typically say?
Yeah, you know, Andy, I think there's so much garbage I hear from day to day, and I hear all of it from every angle. And we definitely don't want to blow Wayfair out of proportion. It is obviously concerning, but here's what's great is typically just working with us very quickly, we can take what seemingly is a very complex situation and simplify it, give them a plan that allows them to understand exactly what they should do going forward.
All right, great. All right, question number two. We've allocated about 3 2/3 minutes to each answer. So,
all right, so the next question typically is, okay, so physical presence is still on, economic nexus is around. How am I going to know where should I register? I come from the UK as an example. Everything's simple, one rate, you know, one obligation. Now I'm coming to the US. This is the Wild West. Make this easy for me. How do I know how to and where to get registered?
Dan, why don't I take a step at this and you can correct me.
Be my guest.
So that is an excellent question, and it's a because you're going to have competing answers on this. So people that have a vested interest in you registering everywhere are going to say, hey, Wayfair means you should register everywhere. And kind of what our message has been all along, it really hasn't changed with Wayfair, is you might technically have nexus in a bunch of places, meaning you have this obligation to get registered and collect the sales tax, but let's weigh that against two other things. One is, yeah, well, is it material though? In other words, if I didn't register, what would be my penalty? And let's weigh those things, because compliance is not free. I don't care what anybody says, it's not free. There is a cost to it. So you got to weigh cost versus benefit. Second of all, what if what you sell isn't even taxable in another state? Wayfair doesn't address that. Wayfair just says you could have nexus or requirement to register and collect tax in a state just simply by virtue of having customers there. That's true. It doesn't mean that if you sell non-taxable things that you should worry about getting registered. So the question of when should I get registered is a practical question. You look at where do you have sales and transactions that exceed the economic presence thresholds that are the new thresholds? Where do I have physical presence? And is it enough sales to justify getting registered in those states, because there's weighing the cost of it? And is what I sell even taxable? Dan?
I think that's very accurate, Andy. As a consultant, when the conversation on where to register is a very it is a very practical one, but it's also a very complicated one. Any consultant that you talk to is going to, one of the reasons I think you see a lot of people getting nervous and saying register everywhere is, as consultants, we're always conservative. You don't want a client coming back and saying, hey, you said, you didn't tell me to register in state X. I clearly, you know, now they're coming back to me and sending me a bill for all these taxes, penalties, and interest. And that's where the conversation is, well, state X has found you. States W, Y, and Z did not. And this is what your costs, you know, you're only selling three items there. So it really was a low risk. And so that's the complicated version of that conversation.
Right. I think in terms of addressing what I think, Russ, you get a lot is people who are just starting out and they've heard things and they're scared. One thing we can say is if you're just starting out and you have a very low volume of transactions, you probably do not need to get registered in a lot of states. And one, so sometimes people are looking for specific number amounts, you know, like dollar value of transactions before I have to worry. And one thing that we've said that I think is helpful is that if you make less than, let's say, $3,000 of sales in a given jurisdiction, I think what we can safely say is I cannot think of a reason that would justify you getting registered if you make less than that amount. I don't say that as soon as you exceed that threshold, now you do. I'm just saying for those ultra-conservative people that are just worried, if you're just starting out, don't worry about this, and your transactions are zero right now or less than 3,000 in a given state, then you don't have to worry about it. Just wait until your transactions start to get up there a little bit.
So Andy, just as a quick follow-up question to that, considering the fact that they can easily determine physical presence nexus, a lot of them are concerned about Wayfair. So does that mean, I'm just trying to stump Dan here, does that mean that looking at the annual transaction data, number of transactions or dollars, that they are now going to tax you on that prior year's transactions? Or is that a triggered event and now they need to register and click going forward?
That it's the latter. That is a triggered event. Once you, and every state's a little bit different on it. Some of them do a rolling year. Some of them do a calendar year. Some of them you're supposed to evaluate quarterly. But once you go through whatever the prescribed method is, and once you determine, you know, I've just now exceeded this mark, either the 200 transactions or the $100,000 in gross sales. That at that point you register going forward. That's not to say suddenly, oh no, I should have known and now I've got to pay all this back tax that I never collected, that I was never supposed to collect. It's all purely a going forward thing.
Awesome. So date of nexus is when they meet the threshold. That's the first date of nexus. Is that correct?
That's correct.
Awesome.
All right. Next question, Russ, before you get too complicated.
Okay, so a lot of the individuals, like you said, Andy, that I talked to are just starting out. They're trying to understand this. So can I do this on my own? I hear that a lot. I mean, how complicated is this? It's a few forms. I'm finding out that this is expensive. So can I do this on my own? And what are my low-cost options potentially to manage this?
All right, so let's define what this is, first of all. So when you say, can we do this on our own? Let's just talk about what this is. This would include, can I evaluate where I have nexus? Can I then decide what states I need to get registered in? Can I actually fill out the forms necessary to register and answer all of the questions? Can I track all of that? And then can I do the periodic filings? It may be quarterly, monthly, annual. Can I set that up in a given software system? Can I set up my Amazon dashboard so that it taxes things correctly and gets the right start dates? Can I do this, Dan, all those steps, and maybe there's some that I've missed. Can I do this on my own?
Absolutely. Like, you can do that on your own, Andy. I
doubt that I could do it on my own.
I've got a couple of clients that have done that on their own. They have put in, they've essentially just had us kind of do a double check. However, that does it. I would analogize it to doing the electrical work on your home. A lot of people do it on their own. It absolutely can be done. But if you don't spend hours reading into it, researching it, watching the YouTube videos, you have a chance of burning your house down. And with state and local tax, it's really no different. It is possible to do every one of these things, but we've got years and years of experience doing it. And we've seen a lot of the pitfalls. We've found some of them the hard way. And if you do it on your own, then if you check the wrong box on that registration, then you can really run into some pitfalls. If you don't know, if you may register for a state and find out what I'm selling isn't entirely taxable there, well, all of a sudden I've got 20 clients emailing me asking them why I charge them tax on this thing. I mean, you don't know what you don't know, and it can be, you can do it on your own, but be prepared to dedicate a lot of hours to figuring it out.
Yeah. I mean, you can certainly do all the registrations on your own, and, We didn't used to do registration services for people because it's so time consuming and so tedious that we didn't want to do it on our own. But we found that there are virtually no services that can do this and that can take you all the way. It can do the whole gamut, right? Figure out where you have nexus, where you should register, make recommendations, and then do that registration service and then actually do all the returns for you. I'm not aware of anybody that can do that full range of services and then be there to support it with a whole team. So here's just part of our team. I don't know if you see him on camera, but clap out there. That's right. You have a whole team of support people. I am the type, man, that likes to do things on my own. I'll pull down the YouTube videos, but I would not venture into this area on my own. I would rather just leave it to someone to say, handle it, right?
Absolutely.
All right, that's a great question. I had a follow-up to that real quickly. And by the way, I see some of our registrations and stars teams back there. I hear what they do, and thank God for those people, because I wouldn't want to do it either. I don't care the cost. Okay, so playing off of this, Dan, you said that there's risk involved. Common question is, if I screw it up, am I going to jail?
Hopefully not.
That was quite a pause right there.
I would say generally, sales tax issues are a civil matter. I have seen them. That's not to say they don't get into the criminal if you ignore them for too long. But they can hurt you plenty without bringing out the handcuffs. We just had a client where the state used the nuclear option on them, and where they went after the only asset they could find, which were their Amazon receivables, and actually had Amazon. They sent notices. They determined an amount that they thought they were owed, and when that amount did not show up, what the state did is send a notice that they were going to levy their receivables to Amazon, and Amazon said, until this is dealt with, we are not paying you anything else. So their cash flow immediately stopped. It was incredibly bad timing, and that's the kind of thing that can turn your lights out in a matter of weeks. So they may not be able to put you in jail, but they can hit you just as well in other areas. We've seen them freeze and levy bank accounts. We've seen them put bond orders in, put liens that start showing up when they least expect it. They can make things very difficult for you, and really they're always finding new ways to try to collect on that money. And to bring up one of the things one of the more erroneous things I keep hearing, they don't need to go to court to do all this. That a lot of the stuff they can do, bring action on their own, and you have, in some cases, may have to go to court to get them to stop.
Right. So I would hasten to insert myself here that we're not attorneys. We don't attempt to practice law. We're not saying whether states can do this legally or whether they're enjoined from doing it legally. None of that. What we're saying is, here's what we've seen them do. Whether or not your attorney might say that's illegal and we'll sue them or we'll get an injunction against them. I don't argue with any of that. There's probably lots of things you can do, but as a practical matter, this is what we see them actually doing. And so you have to weigh that and you have to bear that cost just to deal with it. So, I'm not so cavalier as some people to just say, no, don't worry about it. States have no authority to impose any sanctions on you or put you in prison. And on the other hand, I'm not the other side that says, hey, you better comply with everything because states will throw you in jail. It's actually somewhere in the middle, as most things are.
All right. Awesome. I appreciate that. And that's going to really help relieve a lot of mine. So another question that we get from folks is, it's easy if you're an Amazon seller, inventory states, physical presence, nexus, but what if I'm a drop shipper? What's my situation in terms of sales tax?
So Dan, before you answer that, I'm just going to do a little bit of drop shipping 101. So there's a lot of e-commerce sellers that their whole business model depends on drop shipping because the allure of it is, you don't have to manufacture anything. You don't have to maintain inventory. You just find something that you can buy for a low price and resell it for a slightly higher price. And then your job is to advertise that good. And when someone buys it from you, you place an order with your distributor or the manufacturer and have it drop shipped to that location. So what has changed and what hasn't changed for drop shippers when it comes to sales tax?
Well, Wayfair really didn't address drop shipping directly. Where I think we're going to see the most change in drop shipping is where suppliers start asking for resale certificates. If a supplier is registered in a state, and has to collect sales tax in that state via either because they've got physical presence, they voluntarily decided to register, whatever it may be now, and now under Wayfair, what they're obligated to collect the tax for every shipment delivered into that state unless they receive a resale certificate from you.
Okay, Dan. So let me just reframe that a little bit to say what most e-com sellers that use the dropship model, what their real problem is for sales tax purposes is they could be operating from anywhere in the world. And so they only have nexus, physical presence nexus where they're located. And they may not exceed any of these
thresholds.
However, and in the past, their supplier, their manufacturer, their distributor only had nexus where they had a plant or a warehouse. And so the supplier only cared about their own state. If they shipped a product to their home state, then they needed you to verify or prove that it's for resale with a certificate. Now with Wayfair, that supplier probably has nexus in a lot more places. And so now they have to justify why they're not collecting tax on all those shipments. So that's what you're saying. They're now going to be asking for resale certificates from lots of different states from that one drop shipper.
Exactly. And it's the suppliers are having to get pulled into this increasingly. And so whereas the resale certificate you may have provided before in one state was fine, now they're going to want it in a bunch of states, and you may not be registered in all those states or even be required to be registered in all those states.
So it may force drop shippers to want to get registered in a lot more states so that they don't have to pay. Because remember, this whole arbitrage is the whole deal. So you buy something for $100 and you're selling it for $110, right? And you're making $10 on every transaction. But if the supplier wants to charge you $8 more in tax, your margin just went down to 2. In some case, it went negative, right? You were selling something, buy it for 100, you're selling it for 105. And now the thing you thought you were buying for 100, they're charging you 108 for, and you're losing $3 on every transaction. So you're going to see a lot of drop shippers say, man, for my business to work, I've actually got to get registered in a bunch more states just so I can issue the resale certificate to my supplier. The fact is, it's not true that you have to register everywhere, but that's a state-by-state discussion that goes beyond the scope of what we can talk about today.
Yes, and the only thing I would add is there are a number of states that provide a certificate specifically for drop shippers in that situation that don't require registration. And as Andy said, that's pretty much a webinar in and of itself. So we can't really go into that. But if you do find yourself in that situation, just to let you know, there are options other than registering in every single individual state.
Perfect.
That's good to know. And thank you very much, because sometimes we have to be the bearers of bad news. And if their low margin drop shipping model is not going to work because of tax, then maybe it's best they find out sooner than later. Thank you. Okay, so final question here for you guys, and thanks for your time. I get a lot of questions from especially foreign sellers about income tax obligations. So they say, we already have a foreign tax treaty in place, so I don't have to worry about collecting tax. And then second to that, domestic sellers themselves will say, if I'm registering for sales tax in all these jurisdictions, am I getting myself into an income tax obligation all over the place as well? So those are the kind of two income tax related questions.
Russ, I want to make sure we're understanding the question that you're saying. So you have a lot of e-commerce businesses who, you know, if you sell in the U.S., you have lots of tax problems. You have potential sales tax in lots of places. And the shock to some people is you have potential income tax in lots of places. So we've talked a lot about the sales tax obligations. The question, what you see sometimes on the forums is, don't worry about income tax because the UK has a treaty with the US. So don't be trying to, you know, tell me I've got to file income taxes in different states because we have a treaty. So Dan, how would you answer that one?
Oh boy. You just had to throw an income tax question in there. Well, first off, just to kind of dispel one of those nasty rumors about about those foreign tax treaties, those are binding between the United States government and the foreign government. The states hold themselves as in no way, shape, or form being bound by those tax treaties. So if a state wishes to impose a tax on your foreign income, they can do it. In fact, we know a number of them that do. It is something you have to look at. In some states, it may be you may still have a filing requirement, but you may effectively end up with a $0 return. As many states start with federal income, and if you're starting with zero, you'll end up with zero. Other states have actually gone in and held you need to kind of rework it as though you didn't have a treaty. But that's a very in-depth state-by-state conversation, but you can't just go in and say, the treaty is going to save me. And furthermore, as far as sales tax goes, sales tax has absolutely nothing to do with the treaties in any way, shape, or form. And the states have all the power to impose the sales tax, just like you go trade into the UK, you're going to find yourself dealing with VAT compliance very fast.
Does that answer your questions, Russ?
It does. The second part of that, if you wouldn't mind commenting, though, is if I'm a domestic company, right? What states levy an income tax just because I've got a sales tax obligation?
Well, in any state, Wayfair really didn't change income tax all that much right now. Income tax has always kind of been held. The states have held that their state income taxes are not bound by QUIL, which was the prior decision that's been overruled by Wayfair. And so a lot of states do have an economic threshold for income tax. Now, there's in the event that you are selling goods into a non-FBA state, a state that you don't have any inventory in, if all you're selling into are you selling into those goods, you may actually have protection under a federal law called Public Law 86272, and you may be protected from the income tax there. However, that protection is only to states in which you don't have any. If you have inventory in the states, you will probably exceed that threshold, potentially have an income tax responsibility for the domestic sellers. Any of the FBA states that you have inventory in, you may very well have an income tax responsibility. Some states have pure economic thresholds. If you fall below that, they don't even want a return. Other states will still ask for that return, even if you have no income or just show $50 in income.
One thing I would add there for U.S.-based companies and for foreign-based companies, income tax is not usually your biggest exposure. It's more of a nuisance than anything else. You can't ignore it because some states just require you to file, and some states have minimum taxes that you have to file. But it's not in any way usually comparable to the exposure you might have for sales tax, because sales tax is due on the transaction. So it's 8% of every dollar that you sell, whereas income tax is based typically on your net income and your net income apportioned to all the different states. So that's a much deeper discussion. Dan and I are the co-authors of the AICPA course on multi-state income tax. So if that's interesting to you, I would suggest going there and getting that course. It's about 16-hour course. Dan, we have a lot of work to do still to update that for this year.
Yes.
But there's obviously you can get much more in depth. But for the new seller, I guess my answer to you as the new seller from a foreign country, you're not automatically exempt from income taxes in the U.S. It's a state-by-state decision. But if your sales are low, you probably don't have to worry much about sales tax, and you have to worry less about income tax. If your sales are starting to creep up, you know, then it makes sense to get involved with us and let us, on a state-by-state basis, figure out what you need to be doing. So with that, Russ, thank you very much. Hopefully this has been helpful. That concludes this week's episode. Thank you to our studio audience. Thank you very much, Dan. Thanks for being here.
My pleasure.
And that concludes our episode today. Thank you. We'll see you next week. Oh, yeah.